He did that to me on a weekly basis.
We'll call the meeting to order, and we're going to take testimony on Senate Bill 294, which is the Susitna Hydroelectric Project. Governor Egan, you're first on our list, and should be, to come and testify, if you will. But before you sit there, come over here. We ought to at least shake your hand. Welcome you again to the House. It's nice to see you again.
We just got through.
You can feel free to lecture if you want to.
Well, I didn't come down here to lecture, and I really didn't really realize that I would be a witness here or make a presentation, but it's a real pleasure to be here before this committee. And I've read Senate Bill 294. I think that the goal that legislation has in mind is in consort with the overall approval of the vast number of citizens of our great state, whether they are resident north of the Gulf of Alaska or in the southeastern part of Alaska. I think that the premise that we must begin using more extensively that resource that is so available to us and has, at least in my mind, the least possible environmental devastating, most minimal environmental danger, ecology dangers attached to it. That in the past here in Alaska, and I believe the federal government with respect to Alaska, has not given the kind of attention to our hydroelectric potential that should have prevailed. Now, in the early 1970s, the state contacted the Kaiser Engineering Corporation and with respect to the economic viability of the Susitna proposal that was then being discussed by state officials and with the legislators and with different groups of people over the state with respect to attracting substantial industrial plants to the area. Following the extensive discussions with the Kaiser Electric representatives, the state, with legislative approval, reached and entered into an agreement with Kaiser Kaiser Engineering, whereby Kaiser and the state would share the cost of a preliminary feasibility study. Now, features of the report that eventually came out of that study projected overall favorability. But the balance at that time, in the minds of the Kaiser engineers and just in that preliminary feasibility, bent toward the idea that at that time yet, the cost of other power developed elsewhere over the U.S. coastline from oil and natural, power generated from oil and natural gas fuel, that the balance tended in that direction. They pointed out in that report, though, that that was just that anything could happen, that gradually they could see that over the years up till then there had been a vast change in the potential economic viability of the hydroelectric resource in Alaska. All of us know that just a short time later than that, a tremendous upheaval occurred with respect to the generating costs over this nation and in Alaska from the use of solely from the use of crude oil, diesel oil, and that tremendous inflationary cost of that fuel, it has just known no bounds over the years. It doesn't. In looking forward, I think we would be fooling ourselves to think that we've seen anywhere near the end of the high price of energy producing fuel. Just yesterday, I read where the OPEC nations are again considering an increase. That the Saudis, Saudi Arabian people, oil minister feels that they should hold the line for at least the end of this year. But that doesn't mean that there might not be another very devastating inflationary breakthrough in the near future. And I think that this particular fact, it isn't based on theory. It isn't based on technology. It isn't based on anything else. It's just a blunt fact that we're confronted with. I think that it means that the time has come when we must do everything possible from the standpoint of this state, from the standpoint of committing at least a portion of the riches that are coming from the non-renewable resources of people of Alaska and the people of the nation in some instances here, committing a certain percentage of that to the development of the renewable resources, such as hydroelectric power development here, as well as in the commercial fisheries and other enterprises, visitor traffic, and that sort of a renewable resource that's going to be so meaningful in the future. But I think that that the evidence is very clear that it just happens that the Susitna power resource is capable of producing the greatest amount of energy from one source, those two dams, if they eventually come into being, than whether any other hydroelectric potential along the coastline north of the Gulf of Alaska. We know that here in southeastern we have a Snetisham. One of the problems with Snetisham has been that one of the projections had to do with the orderly development of the North Tongass timber development, which would have used a considerable amount of the power that was generated from Snetisham. But at the time that fact was related to the reports that came out, there was no knowledge then that individuals would step into the picture and stop that, put a halt to any kind of orderly development of the North Tongass. I think that in the future, many of the people who were responsible for stopping that development will realize that orderly development in the North Tongass too. I'm always mentioning this with respect to, we hear very often when we talk about Snetisham that our Susitna, it relates back, people will say, well, what about Snetisham in southeastern? That has proved to be a boondoggle. It hasn't. It's providing power regularly, and if you were to measure the cost of that installation as against today's dollars, it is much less than what the anti-development people, power development people, would have you believe. And it isn't going to be too long till, regardless of the capital move, regardless of anything else, and this area of Alaska also has some tremendous potential developments that are going to be in their development are going to be such that they'll provide a very minimal degradation of the environmental and the ecological processes. But I am absolutely convinced that Senate Bill 294, I'm also aware of the legislative processes, and I'm not naive enough to think that every T and every I that's dotted in Senate Bill 294 will become be approved by the Senate and the House of the Alaska Legislature. But I do hope that the general basic idea of the bill is remains intact, and that so that the state of Alaska can show our federal government people, the commission committees of the federal government who are responsible for the Federal Energy Commission approvals, that they will work with you as citizens or public servants and with the people in the Alaska Power Authority to arrive at reasonable conclusions. I know that the Alaska Power Authority people are very cognizant of the need to prove to the people in the immediate area below the dam, the proposed dams particularly, that the seismic areas involved and whether or not they are truly dangerous areas and whether or not it would be too overly costly to provide footings that would overcome any possible seismic disturbance. I think all Alaskans will agree that those kind of things will come out of the professional, unbiased studies that come about, and that the hydrological studies will be on that plane. And I do hope that 10 or 15 years from now we'll have the first dam producing power into a grid that will serve a large part of the state of Alaska, and will be producing new industry also for the state of Alaska. With that, I just wanted to say thank you very much for the opportunity to be here with you today.
Thank you very much, Governor. Any questions or before the Governor leaves?
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if after we get testimony, those that can stay, we could ask them questions that will occur during the process.
Sure. Long. Thank you very much, Governor. Next is Lee Wareham here. Oh, yes, Lee. Come forward, please. State your name for the record, if you will, and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Lee Wareham. I'm here as a citizen of the interior of Alaska and as a borough assemblyman from Fairbanks, as well as one of the co-chairmen of the Sioux City Power Now organization. I would like to point out to you that the subject that we're discussing here today is a integral part of the solution of a problem that's existed for the residents of Alaska as long as there have been Alaskans, and that is the burden of extremely high costs that we bear in everything we do, and particularly with regard to energy in light of the recent escalation in the cost of hydrocarbon fuels. We're now in a position where in the Fairbanks area the cost of energy has doubled in the last few years, and the slope of the curve is very steeply upward, and we're hurting. The people have got very serious problems. In the Anchorage area, while they've enjoyed an advantage caused by their ready access to the natural gas fields, that advantage is very quickly evaporating out from under. The mechanics, the mechanisms of the pricing and supply and demand of the natural gas mean that there will be a dramatic economic shakeout in the Anchorage area with regard to, and the entire south central area with regard to the cost of energy. We're talking really not about a development project here, but about a way to address a social problem that will only grow worse as time goes on. We're talking about a solution that if we take resources, financial resources that are now and capabilities that are becoming available to the state and wisely apply them, we will not only be able to lessen the burden, the absolute burden on our citizens, we'll be able to dramatically lower the cost of living difference that exists between Alaska and the other areas of the state. The rest of the United States has developed their hydropower. They're not in a position now to go out and solve energy problems with hydropower. If we can lower the cost of living differential in Alaska, it's obvious that a lot of things flow from that. We have a in Susitna an opportunity to address a problem and provide a stable baseload source of energy that will last and largely address our needs well into the next century without massive environmental damage, without increasing the carbon dioxide problem in the Earth's atmosphere, without sulfur dioxide pollution, without particulate problem. We should be exporting to those people who have to have it, our coal, oil, natural gas. We have the equivalent of an oil field that will produce 15.2 million barrels of oil a year in perpetuity sliding down that canyon right now. That's a renewable resource that's not being tapped. It's being wasted. We're looking at a reservoir that when the dam system is finished will occupy only about 50,000 acres. I literally know of no other hydro project in the world that will provide the relationship of acres of impoundment to kilowatts, the favorable relationship that Susitna project offers to us. We're not talking about flooding vast areas. We're not talking about going in and doing undue violence to the area and to the ecological balance. Nothing we do that involves human endeavor is without some environmental penalty. We have to recognize that. We also have to recognize that as prudent men and women, it's our job to make the trade-offs, to find where the balance point is, to see where the true values lie. We should keep in mind that in the Susitna project, under state auspices as envisioned in the legislation we're considering here today, we have an opportunity to control our destiny, our economic destiny, to take something out of the hands of the federal government that's been there since the mid-40s, 46, 48, the initial work was done on that project. The federal government is not moving at a pace that's acceptable to our needs. We don't have control over what happens in Washington. We now have the financial resources, and we literally have the wherewithal. We have the vehicle through the Alaska Power Authority to undertake this project. We have the ability to undertake it and get it done years faster than it ever would be done under federal auspices. We have the ability to undertake the project and tailor it to Alaska's needs. We can guarantee through the writing of the contracts in ways that are constitutionally acceptable, Alaska hire. We have a project that we can build ourselves and pay ourselves to build it. When it's through, we derive the benefit from the product it produces, and the revenue that's generated by the sale of that product comes back into our own coffers to be reused again. This is a perfect example of taking a non-renewable resource and converting it into something that we can use long after the pipeline is dry, long after the oil fields are empty, and we can take our hydrocarbons and let them go to some place where the people don't have any other alternatives. This is the single most important economic and social undertaking that has come along in years. I can't think of anything that compares with it. We should proceed with all deliberate haste.
Okay, thank you. Any questions by the committee? Okay, if not, Liz Gilbert. Please state your name for the record. Thank you.
I'm Liz Gilbert, member of Susitna Power Now from Anchorage. And I would simply like to go on record and support Senate Bills 294 and 385. I believe that any action that you men and women can take that will provide an expeditious handling of those bills and then the project would be beneficial to all Alaskans. I would support it. I also would like to provide written testimony in support of the project by Becky Gottschalk from Anchorage, also a member of Susitna Power Now.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you. We'll reproduce this and give conference to the committee. Next on our list is Dorothy Jones. Dorothy, please state your name for the record and proceed if you will.
My name is Dorothy Jones. I'm from the Matanuska Susitna Borough, and I'm also a member of Susitna Power Now. I've been an Alaskan for over 45 years, and I have lived in the Talkeetna area for a little over 25 years. And Talkeetna, as you may know or may not know, sits right at the base of one of the dams, the last dam that would be built. We're all in support of, or at least I am, and I'm the assembly, we're in support of this bill. I'd like to see it passed as soon as feasibly possible. I have a personal interest in it as well. My father was one of the first people that went down the Devil's Canyon with the hydrologists that were first sent by the United States government to check the feasibility of hydroelectric power for Alaska. It's a long story. It is a matter of congressional record, but it does become a matter of personal concern. And now, since I am on the Matanuska Susitna Assembly, it also becomes an economic concern. A dollar spent here with your Susitna dam, and people who are well-versed in the economy can speak to it better than I, but if you spend a dollar there, it's going to go from hand to hand 5 to 7 times again, and it'll be a great economic boost to the entire state, and I would urge that you pass it with all feasible haste.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No, thank you very much. Chuck Smith?
Dorothy, what time, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, what sure. time did the federal government make, to your knowledge, and your family's knowledge, the first survey on, what year was that?
What do you know?
Well, the actual survey down the river started in 48, but the congressional bodies started passing or talking about this hydro project in the mid-40s during World War II, and monies became available after World War II. Then took some time to put the monies online, and the hydrologists actually made the first arrangements in 47, and they went down Devil's Canyon in 48.
Thank you. Excuse me. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, come forward. State your name for the record, please, and continue.
Chairman, Senator Sumner, and senators of the Senate Resource Committee, my name is Chuck Smith. I have been an Alaskan resident for 35 years. I've been a property owner in the Matanuska Susitna Valley for the past 18 years, and I presently live in Wasilla. I'm also the Matanuska Susitna representative on the Executive Committee of the Susitna Now Committee. Unlike many of the persons that will speak on this issue this afternoon, I am not an expert in the area of hydroelectric power. In fact, my knowledge is quite limited in this, in the technical aspects of this field. However, I am very aware of some of the affected and related areas involved in this project. One, we are facing an acknowledged severe power shortage. As Mr. Wareham testified a little bit earlier, our present power rates are extremely high. The economy and the employment situation in the Rail Belt area is presently suffering an all-time low. The answer, for the most part, to all of these areas lie in the proposed Susitna Dam hydroelectric project. This dam project has been studied and surveyed and studied and surveyed for 35 to 40 years. Dorothy Jones just mentioned her father surveyed this project for the Department of Interior many years ago. It would be of interest to those who are interested in following this up that a historical data project is being compiled in Harry Gould's office in Anchorage, where the congressional record about Dorothy Jones' father and all previous survey records of past work on this project will be compiled. After knowing that this much survey work and studying has taken place, to suggest that further study needs to be done on the Susitna Dam project, seemingly delaying it further, to me would be quite unreasonable. I feel that this thing has been surveyed enough, it's time to get going. The timing is right now, the need is apparent, the funds are available to implement the project, and I urge both your strong support and your prompt support in backing Senate Bill 295, 294, and 385. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Smith? No, thank you very much. Jim Eckstead? Would you state your name for the record, please, and continue with your testimony?
Thank you, Senator. My name is Jim Eckstead. I'm with the Mattson Borough as an assembly person and also on the Palmer City Council. And as the witnesses before me have stated, we are in quite a employment slump in our area, and we look at the dam project as a catalyst to get the thing going again. As I don't know if you're aware, we have a project slated for McKenzie Point that will be requiring blocks of power, and we need this to develop it. I myself personally have flown the dam site many times on fishing trips, and I know I have friends who would like to kayak that river, and it is very hard. I would never get in that river and put a boat in there. But that is a concern, but I think there's plenty of other rivers in the state that would be applicable to this. I've also lived in areas, if we don't get the dam, where we've had brownouts. I lived in a small village in the Philippines where every 2 hours you switch from one side to the other, and it's very disturbing when you watch TV. I tell you, can keep track of the switching. Anyhow, I would like to go on record that we do pass this bill at your earliest convenience.
Thank you very much. Thomas Starr. Mr. Starr, would you state your name for the record, please, and continue?
Thank you. My name is Thomas Starr, General Manager of Anchorage Municipal Light and Power. I want to testify in favor of Senate Bill 294, 295, and 385. Not too long ago, any consideration of Susitna would center around the question of whether or not we would actually need the electrical energy it would produce. Now the situation is radically changed. The proper concern now is how we will continue to supply present energy demands if we do not build Susitna. Conservation is again a serious issue, not as an alternative, because serious examination shows this is not a realistic concept, but that Susitna will in itself be a massive contribution to conservation of oil and gas. And serious conservation will be necessary to keep demands from exceeding what Susitna can produce. In 1979, the utilities in the area which could be supplied by Susitna generated 2.5 billion kilowatt hours. Military Central Station generation of over 315 million kilowatt hours brings this total to over 2.8 billion kilowatt hours. Wantana Dam, the first stage of the Susitna project, will only produce 3.1 billion kilowatt hours. Therefore, the load for this stage of the project already exists without considering the other existing energy demands where renewable hydropower could be beneficially substituted for oil. To produce the 2.5 billion kilowatt hours, the area utilities consumed 35.4 trillion BTUs of fossil fuels. This is the energy equivalent of 6.2 million barrels of oil. Therefore, even the first stage of Susitna will achieve massive conservation of oil and gas. If Alaskans had to pay for this fuel at current world market prices, the bill would be over $186 million a year, which is approximately twice the total paid for electricity now. In terms of electric rates, world market fuel prices mean rates would, on the average, triple. It is inconceivable that by the 1990s, when Susitna is possible, the Alaskan fuel prices will not be in excess of current world prices. In regard to the complete Susitna project, the total output is slightly in excess of twice current electrical use. Since we are looking at 12 to 16 years for final completion, even a small annual growth will close the gap. In fact, an annual growth above the 4 to 7% range would result in demands in excess of the capacity of Susitna. Since Alaska's historical growth rates are in the order of 13%, it is clear that a great deal of conservation effort will be required to keep demands within the range of what Susitna can supply. Realistically, this is the maximum one could possibly expect from serious conservation. That is, bringing the load down to the point where Susitna could supply it. This brings to what is perhaps the most critical issue. We must have some firm energy plans and goals. And here I want to make it crystal clear, I'm not talking about the verbal hogwash that usually goes by the name of energy plans and policies. The simple truth is, the world is running out of convenient and inexpensive oil and gas. Conservation alone is no answer, it can only buy us a little time. The only prudent approach is to make firm commitments to provide for our energy future needs by developing Susitna. We can then rationally use effective conservation measures as a bridge to that goal. A perfect example of this is the proposed Anchorage-Fairbanks tie line, which complements the long-term plan, conserves energy, and more effectively utilizes the existing power resources. For the post-Susitna period, you will find the feasibility of most alternative energy schemes will be greatly enhanced by having Susitna as an energy storage for the days when the sun does not shine and the wind does not blow. In the long run, you will find a large hydropower project like Susitna absolutely necessary to make significant use of alternate energy sources. Thank you.
Any questions before you get advice?
I just
numbers.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to check a figure. Did you say this 1.86 million pound was per year was the equivalent of what we're using now or what we would be using to produce that amount of kilowatt hours? 1.86 million, I thought I heard you say. Was it 86 million?
186 million dollars would be the price of the fuel we're now using if we paid for it at $30 a barrel.
World market prices now.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to take about a 2 minute recess here. I understand we're having some recording problems. If it takes longer than that, we're going to go back on the record and go anyway. And the next witness to come forward then would be Joe Gildhoff. Please. We'll be standing in recess for about 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Would you state your name for the record and continue with your testimony, please?
Surely. My name is Joe Gildhoff, Mr. Chairman, and I'm here representing the Alaskan Conservation Society, Fairbanks Environmental Center, the Alaska Center for the Environment, in Anchorage, and several other statewide environmental conservation groups. All of the environmental conservation groups in Alaska are concerned and very interested in this largest public works project in the history of Alaska, and undertaken by the state would have a serious impact on the economy of the entire state. So it's worthy of a hard look by this committee and the entire legislature. I personally, and I think the people I represent, are more concerned about this bill because not the quantities involved, and I'm not going to trot out all kinds of quantitative analysis, but because it affects the quality of life in Alaska. I'm not sure we are prepared to say that this is going to have a huge environmental impact and degrade the environment, but it certainly will do some things perhaps more in the political and philosophical realm than it will even to the environment. You know, it's a terrible thing when I can say that we could live with the caribou herd that won't be affected by this if they were gone. We could substantially impact the salmon fishery that is in the lower Susitna, and it will have an impact if we build this. But, you know, we could live with it. I'm not sure, and something that you have to consider very closely, whether we want to put all of our energy eggs, so to speak, into one basket. And that's what substantially this bill would do. Now, we would like you to look long and hard at alternatives, and there are alternatives to this. If you want to create jobs, we can build lots of energy projects with the money available. And they could be a good mixture of hydropower, and when I say hydro, I mean smaller scale hydropower. I mean solar, develop geothermal, and something that perhaps is heresy in environmental circles, I say we ought to explore our clean coal. I'm not wild about exporting it to other places. I'm sure we will if there's enough of it. But I'm more interested in using our energy sources, resources, within the states for Alaskans. And I think a better mixture, a better of energy production will meet the needs of Alaskans now and in the future. So an interesting point that was raised was, well, we've studied this and perhaps we've studied it to death. If we studied it and the conclusions were based on some rational data, they came out good, then why didn't we go ahead and build this? At least one of those earlier surveys, the conclusion was, no, this isn't a time to build this. I think this bill is premature. It does need more study. There are techniques that we could use, including econometric end use modeling, that would give us a clearer picture of what it is we're trying to do here, so that when we sink our money, this one-time money that we have derived from the oil resource into continuing energy production, we don't make a mistake. And that issue here is not $6 or $8 billion, whatever it is, it comes in with all the overruns, and there most assuredly will be cost overruns. It's the quality of life. And I, for one, don't want to see us tie up our energy production in this single source. Look what happens when you have a single source of anything, whether it's political power, whether it's energy production. It makes us very vulnerable, doesn't that? Wasn't that the main lesson from the 73 Arab oil embargo? We became vulnerable, and now we're more vulnerable to a single source of energy.
And you don't see the hydroelectric project as an alternate source of energy?
I think it most assuredly is, but on this scale, we are over-investing in a single source to the detriment, not only economically of the state as a whole, but probably politically. To the state, and we'll set up a massive cross-subsidy from people not living in this area to people that are living in the area. You know, there's no doubt in my mind, some people will benefit by this project. This is the greatest boom project to come down the pipe. You know, we talk about boom and bust in Alaska. You'll boom the economy, some people are going to make a killing on this. Some people will be involved in the species speculation that always follows these kind of projects. People will go to work. There will be jobs. But if you want continuing jobs for Alaskans where they don't come in from the south, I think they would be well advised to go with a number of smaller scale projects that will meet our needs now and in the future.
Mr. Chairman.
Let me get just a couple to follow up, and then we'll rotate. Since you're opposed to the project, I assume from your testimony, have you looked at the other side of it, what positive benefits there might come as well as the negative side? And if so, would you share some of the positive benefits that you see coming from the project?
Surely. I think there's no doubt there are some what you might call in the short term positive benefits. Anytime we spend, what, $6 or $8 billion, there better be some positive benefits. We talk about cheaper power for the consumers, and that is a worthy consideration and should be one of the major goals of this.
Do you share that? Do you think there will be cheaper power as a result of the completion of the project?
I think for some people, there may be cheaper power, especially when we're comparing now. Some of these studies are comparing the what is acknowledged as artificially low natural gas power, and it will rise. Of course, if we sink this much money into it, it will make that power cheaper for some people. But look, power is always, energy is always a problem. You heard previous testimony that says this is the solution to this problem. I can say, without a doubt in my mind, there are no solution to energy. It's always going to be a problem. It's a problem for us in Alaska. It will be. Listen, it's a problem for the men and women in Pakistan that have to walk out 6 miles to gather firewood every day. That's a real problem for them, wherever there are human organisms. It's a problem. What we need is a realistic and reasonable approach to solving this problem, not something that just throws money at it in an irrational, illogical, and I think ultimately ill-conceived manner.
Do you think hydroelectric is just not a good alternative way to go compared to fossil fuels?
No, I think there are many, many examples of how hydro is good, clean, renewable power at a certain scale. Now, when we look at Switzerland, which has a number of hydroelectric plants in operation and they transmit their power, I think it's a good example of what a stable society is doing. I might add, they're relatively small-scale hydro projects. They're not massive projects where you do that and then you wheel the power all over. Think of how vulnerable we'd be if we went with one big project.
Senator,
you mentioned in your testimony that you think there ought to be other projects. Power projects, and I think you've sat in here enough to know that there are many other small electrical power projects, hydropower projects going at this time, and we're certainly interested in them and in the small dams where they are the most feasible. Also, you mentioned that alternative energy projects should be explored. You know that we are working in the legislature towards alternative energy and great with grants and all those things. So those things are being looked at. We're not ignoring them, And I question one part of your testimony and then want to commend you on another part. And that part is that only a few people would benefit from this. I think anytime you relieve the majority of the population of the cost of energy, you can't help but help others through not using the source of energy that's needed in other areas. And I'm also glad to hear that you say that you were not going to fight this on a conservation type element, because I can remember testimony by your groups at the Rampart Dam hearings many years ago, when it was at your suggestion, and by you, I mean collectively your organizations, that we consider, rather than Rampart Dam, the Susitna Devil's Canyon project. So in a way, you people now should be saying, hey, thank you, you finally got around to what we suggested many years ago, and you should join behind us and say, let's go, team.
Touche. I don't think anyone's ever accused the environmental community in the state of Alaska of having all the smarts and being right all the time. And when I talked about the degradation to the caribou herd and the wildlife values in this area, I think I prefaced that with the statement that it's a terrible day when we almost will leave that go, because we are more interested in the political and economic ramifications of this bill. I think that's not to say we should forget about the environmental consequences. And that includes, too, the geological formations up there. That is a very much an open question and something that you should all be concerned with.
And we are, Joe.
Yeah.
But I did want to remind you, in case you had forgotten it, I've got pages and pages of it, in case you'd like to see it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
How long have you been here? Have you been raised here?
I have not been raised here. I came up on the ferry boat on September 16, 1979 from Prince Rupert.
Mrs. Fahrenkamp made a very good analysis that I can almost see the ghost and the whisper of the past when they were discussing the rampart, and the leading environmentalists, and Nader was one of them at the time, and the Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, Federal Fish and Wildlife, all recommended, said that they already knew that this was the reasonable trade-off, that Alaska could consume this power and needed it in the greater Rail Belt area, and that Devil's Canyon was the project that they heartily endorsed and recommended. That is a matter of record, and it's available. If you know Devil's Canyon well, you know it is a deep trench. It's one small portion of the river. It's a feeder. Fish and Wildlife says that salmon are downstream from there, the last spawning bed. The caribou would find it be difficult to traverse the area that will be flooded. I don't think it affects them in any meaningful way. None that I can tell. I've lived in the area for, like Dorothy, I came to Alaska with her for 45 years. Finally, on the economics of it, it's sort of the Columbia Basin in a way. We have an area that's pretty sterile of the economy. We have an area that I don't see any particular wildlife habitat in. The jobs and the economy that would be stimulated today could indeed be a boom, and it could indeed bring people up here. But look at what that project in the Northwest did for Seattle. Look what it did for the farming of the Great Desert area. And look what it's doing, did for the war effort. And look what it's doing today. I think that we have something similar here in Alaska, on a smaller scale perhaps. But I think you have the best of all worlds when you have a minimum desecration, you have no air pollution, and you have an economy today that can be stimulated in the slump, and you have a positive contribution to a long-lasting economy for the future. It seems to me almost like having your cake and eat it too. Again, this rail belt area extending. Price. And the profits, it's been suggested by Mr. Worm, one of the incentives might be that we would indeed create some profit from this project, not just pay off its debt service. That profit could go to subsidize some of the raw desert areas of this state, just making a reference, a comparison, and provide some energy relief, money, resource relief to those areas from the profit, and otherwise subsidize the fuel that they'll need. You have to look at it very strongly before, and it has been, it's been examined, as you can tell. But I'd look at it very, very closely before I would write that project on.
May I respond, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, go ahead.
What assurances or checks are you, as a body, building into this legislation to ensure that we are not just continuing on a larger scale the traditional boom and bust economic cycle in Alaska? There's no doubt, as the good senator said, this will boom certain aspects of the economy. But you know, public work projects traditionally have they're like a two-edged sword. They tend to benefit or cut through problems, but they come back to haunt you sometimes too. I'm thinking, for example, of the Roman Empire built many roads. They were, for that time, marvelous public works projects. They allowed the empire situated in Italy to send out messages and everything else. But when the Rome fell, the invaders from Gaul and places far removed from Rome used those roads to filter into what's now Italy. And I bring that up as an example of, we don't know always the consequences, the long-term effects, and there will be adverse effects that will take place with this type of public works project. On this scale, therefore, it deserves more analysis and a closer look. Saying it's premature for those reasons, and I think this body would be ill-advised to send it out as is.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for entering into the debate committee's time, but the point is, we're not digging a ditch and filling it up. We are creating a future economy. not with not $100 a barrel oil, but a firm power. They say at the production level, not at the distribution, this is a firm source for 100 to 200 years. With very low inflationary factor. It's in a very remote area that isn't screwing up wildlife, isn't desecrating the environment. You check the location. We create, I think, for Alaska, what the Columbia Basin Project did for that area, insofar as economic terms go, with much less environmental problems. And I think we have our cake and eat it too with this project. That's the thing that gets me very much hooked. It isn't the negative thing of a road that you maintain forever. You build it, then it pays itself off, subsidizes other projects, and provides a firm source for everything from a machine shop to the whole heating of your home. And it's very hard to understand where you come from if you examine all the aspects of a hydroelectric project in this particular location. It comes the closest to solving an economy of the future as well as an economic assist today. I'll quit it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bennett.
I really don't have a question. I have more than anything, I have a statement. You know, I sat through some of the Ramparts hearings and what have you back in the 60s, and I was told at that time that should we dam the mighty Yukon River, we were going to flood the marshy areas in the Yukon Flats, and consequently all the ducks would drown. I didn't buy that at the time. However, I even buy it less that, in fact, it have any effect on caribou. We all know who have lived in this magnificent state for a decade or more. Paxton Lake has been there for thousands of years, and it certainly hasn't bothered the caribou. They still swim across the south end of it. The mighty Yukon River, the 40-mile herd swims it every year, quarter mile to a half mile wide. A water body has little or no effect on caribou or their migration. And I just really kind of resent constantly being told, much as we did during the oil pipeline, that the caribou can't get across the pipe to the calving grounds. It really is irrelevant, and I think it's personal, Mr. Chairman, it's wasting my time. Thank you.
Any other questions by the committee? Not? Any response?
Briefly, Mr. Chairman.
You will?
You know, we don't want to go on record as saying we're flat out opposed to developing energy. We're not. We want to develop energy, lots of it, cheap, clean, and I think there are alternatives. You know, there's that old saying you can't make bacon without killing pigs. Okay, in this case, we know we're going to kill a pig. You know there's going to be a pork project here, or however you want to look at it. What we're saying is we want to cut this up and make it into palatable quantities. We want some pork chops, we want some hams for everybody. We don't want just one pig that you're going to try to push down the state of Alaska's throat.
Let me ask you a question then. In that you advocate that position, do you have alternate sites? And
Mr. Chairman, I'll leave you. This is developed by the Fairbanks Environmental Center, dealing with the two bills specifically, plus Senate Bill 385. I draw your attention to page 5 and 6, where they talk about alternatives and what they recommend. When you're going to spend the state's money on energy, that you look at these alternatives.
My question was, do you have any alternate sites? Can you name any alternate sites at the moment?
The Totolanica River in the interior, and there are other hydro sites specifically.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
So I will leave this with you.
Yes, if you will.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I wonder if Terry McGuire, we had the opportunity in Anchorage and in this other forum previous to that one of receiving a description and with that time with photos and I wonder if he could give us a quick description of the location, if he is here, Mr. McGuire. Just a quick description as a technical person with Alaska Power Authority, and I wonder if he could give us a description roughly of the geography of the area and the terrain there as an engineer and a person who knows it.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Terry McGuire. I work for the Alaska Power Authority. My undergraduate degree is in engineering, but I'm not presently working as an engineer for the Power Authority, even though I am extremely familiar and close to this project. The Susitna Basin is a great expanse of many tributaries and east and west forks of a large river system of significant scope, which I do not know the exact number of square miles of which it covers, but it drains from rolling hills and mountainous terrain and some vast plateaus into the main Susitna River system, which flows downstream principally from the northern portion of the Mat-Su borough, runs west through a more steep canyon expanse of approximately 40 miles, which time the actual cliffs become narrower, the canyon becomes narrower, and the actual stream becomes more rapid. The actual elevation of the river drops from approximately an elevation of 2,000 feet to approximately 700 feet in a distance of approximately 80 to 100 miles. This distance, this elevation and distance is quite unique, associated with the National River Valley of the dimensions and the possible locations, the geologic conditions that have been identified to support the foundations for different structures for holding large masses of water or reservoirs of water for the production of power. Each proposed, the principal two proposed dam sites, the Wakana Dam site and the Devil Canyon Dam site, have the potential of being approximately 700 feet in height for the finished, completed structure, and have the capacity each to produce approximately 3.5 billion kilowatt hours of energy per year. The upstream basin formed by the larger dam, the Wakana Dam, is the principal storage reservoir where most of the water will be stored for future release to produce power from not only the Wakana Dam powerhouse, but also the Devil Canyon Dam downstream, which serves as a regulating factor in power production of all the power which is stored within the Wakana Reservoir. The reservoir in the Devil Canyon Dam, due to the geography, the terrain, a very narrow canyon, is not going to have storage capacity significant to provide significant amounts of firm energy to the Rail Belt area. This is the principal purpose of the Wakana Reservoir. After approximately 5 miles downstream from the proposed Devil Canyon Dam site, the gorge becomes more expansive as it heads into the Susitna downstream basin as we approach the area around Talkeetna and exit the Talkeetna Mountains and enter a more diverse river system that is supportive of an endangered species fishery.
Did you say that the Susitna, so-called the Susitna dam sites and the river that they affect, the geography of it would take one half of 1% of what we call the Susitna River system in landmass or in geographic mass. It's a tiny, it's not small, but comparative to the Susitna River floodplain area and river, it's just a small chute, the extreme eastern chute of that river system, isn't it?
The actual reservoir area, as was stated, I believe, by Mr. Wernham, is slightly over 50,000 acres, which approximately 640 acres per square mile is in the area of 100 square miles of reservoir area. I wish I had brought documents with me referring to this project in more detail. I could give you specific data. However, I was called here from Ketchikan on another purpose. And the actual basin area, in my estimation, is in the thousands of square miles.
So it's a very tiny little portion of that whole basin system.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? No, thank you very much. You want to call me?
Mr. Harry Reimer, presiding officer, North Star Bureau.
Would you please state your name for the record and continue?
Harry Reimer, Fairbanks, North Star Borough Assembly and presiding officer at the present time. Mr. Chairman and committee members, with your permission, I would like to read into the record a wire that you got from Mayor Carlson a few days ago.
Yes.
I would like to reemphasize my support for Senate Bill 294, as I testified in Anchorage last month. The cost of electric power for interior Alaska residents has now become the single most critical factor limiting their efforts for a higher standard of living and more diversified economy. The development of hydroelectric power during the 1930s and 40s in the Pacific Northwest has now resulted in stable and virtually inflation-free energy supplies to residents of that region. We have the opportunity to create similar benefits for residents of the interior to South Central Alaska in the next two decades. Additionally, Alaska now has available the surplus capital necessary to develop a Susitna hydroelectric project ourselves. We respectfully urge the Senate Natural Resource Committee to give favorable and expeditious consideration to this and supporting legislation. I've been in Alaska since 1943. I, too, remember the testimony from that was referred to by a previous speaker regarding the Rampart Dam and that this was the alternative to go to. And I'm rather appalled at the lackadaisical attitude that some of the groups have in this state and wanting to study and study and restudy some more. And then when we get to that project that's recommended, then another study has to be projected for other sources. I would like to state that at the present time, we have a multitude of small energy-producing systems throughout the state. And the only way that we will ever get cheaper power is if we build a large hydroelectric plant. And these smaller resident systems can be held for backup. And I would strongly urge that these two bills be forwarded and passed at the earliest possible date. I would also like to state that the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly overwhelmingly passed resolutions supporting these bills. And with your permission, I would also like to submit for the record, without taking time at the present time, to read these written testimonies. Testimony from Councilwoman Ruth Burnett, Fairbanks Council, Assemblyman Phil Yonker from Fairbanks North Star Borough, and Mayor Wood from the City of Fairbanks, and also from Representative Robert Bedeville.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions before we leave the podium? If not, thank you very much. Oh. Thank you very much.
Mike Rebar.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to give my testimony to you today. I'm Mike Rebar, member of Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. I've lived in Fairbanks since the age of 8 months. As I have grown, so has my community and the state. Though I was present, my memory does not serve of its own, but I'm told that I came into the world with a good set of lungs and weighing 8 pounds, 2 ounces. As I grew, I lacked nothing. I had plenty of love and attention. The education afforded to me has been sufficient to survive in a world that demands knowledge. More important, I have learned to continue learning. Love, attention, and education are a necessity, but not the key in making me what I am today. My health and mental awareness are derived from nourishment. I have never starved. To have sustenance is the key to a healthy environment. My analogy relates to energy and an economy. The economy is that of this state. The energy is Susitna. This state is in its childhood years. It requires all the love and attention we can provide. We must educate the inhabitants so that they are active participants in the growing years. But all this is for naught if we cannot provide the energy needed for the state to grow to maturity. Starvation causes weakness, makes one more susceptible to disease. Without sufficient energy, there is greed for the little that is available. There is jealousy and divisiveness. The state of Alaska rapidly approaches the point of starvation. Projected electrical needs outstrip production. If it is a desire of the people of Alaska to proceed with development in an orderly fashion, we must have electricity when it is needed. Susitna power has been shown to be the cleanest and most efficient means by which we can provide electricity. In conjunction with the proposed power grid, affordable electricity would be available to a substantial area of Alaska. As Alaska approaches maturity, we can't afford to be hungry. Susitna is a step towards self-reliance and independence we require in order to allow those who choose Alaska as a home to be able to earn a livelihood that they may enjoy all else that Alaska offers. Without Susitna, we create another roadblock to the future. We create greed, distrust, and infighting. The time for study and debate is over. Susitna can be built. It can provide power efficiently and do so in harmony with the total environment. Stopping this project will not stop Alaska, but it will tie a millstone around its neck. I implore you, as people of vision, to move forward with Susitna. We have many other subjects that must be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? If not, thank you very much. Mr. Palmer? And if you will be kind enough to give us your name for the record and proceed. And be kind.
Thank you. My name is Ike Walter. I'm a business manager of the Electrical Workers Union in the state of Alaska. I also am on the board of directors of Susitna Power Now. And usually one of the persons that gets accused when it's necessary for the utilities to raise their rates, they always try to blame it on the working man and the labor rates. But that really only constitutes about 10% of the total cost of operating an electrical utility. I previously testified in Anchorage. Before I start that, I might say that I've been in Anchorage in Alaska about 25 years. And I was here also when the Rampart Canyon Dam project was on the horizon, and when the environmentalist groups testified that Susitna was the answer and was the alternative method to go. It's been probably about 16 or 17 years ago. I don't think there's a project in the state of Alaska that would really touch more people than Susitna. This would the Rail Belt area is about represents between 80% and 85% of the population of the state of Alaska, and this project would provide a stabilization effect on the cost of power for the next 300 years, perhaps even longer. I think that no better heritage could be passed on to our children for generations to come than a project such as this. And I think that we should get on with the program. I have a testimony from about 40 plus residents of the state from Ketchikan to Barrow, and it's a cross section of the residents. I'd like to pass this on as it offers written testimony. Outside of that, we all know what the cost of fossil fuel is doing in the state or in the world. Who's to say what it is 10 years from now? Who's to say what it is 50 years from now? We've got to have an alternative source of energy, and to me, the hydro is a natural in Alaska and should be developed. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I want to compliment you on the letters. When I get letters before the committee, I go through and see if they're all written in the same pen and all written by the same person. And,
those are different parts of the state. Yeah, yeah.
You did well. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. President, yes. Mr. Chairman,
yes.
At home we say you've done good.
Is that right? Mike, you've done good. Here you go. You want to make sure. Any further testimony? That was the end of the list of people I had names for to testify.
Chairman.
Yes.
I called your office.
Well, I didn't get your... What is your name, please?
Austin Ward.
Okay. Come forward, please. We didn't get your name on the list, Austin. I'm sorry about that.
seems to be my luck.
Mr. Chairman,
it may even turn out to be our luck. I don't know.
Yeah, it might be.
Anyone else whose name we've missed? Okay, couple, all right. Jane, and your name, please?
Al Larson.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I hope Austin Ward, and I suspect he will, but I hope he'll introduce himself and a little of his background. He has made a substantial contribution.
If he didn't plan to, I'm sure he will now.
I will. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm Austin Ward of Fairbanks, currently president of Energy for Alaska Incorporated, which was Rampart Dam Group, and member of Susitna Power Now. And I must say, before I go into my written copy, that at least the environmentalists are consistent. When we worked for Rampart Dam, they said to build Susitna. Now we're trying to build Susitna, and they're saying build little ditches. So I want to compliment them on their consistency. Anyway, over 20 years has passed since my interest in hydropower first received my attention with the Rampart Dam project. Since those early years, and to this day, I work for a renewable energy source. And I wish to open with a quote from a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Rich Seifert, in the Institute of Water Resources. He says it now costs $7 peak watt to generate power from solar cells, which are voltaic photo. But recent government projections say it will drop to 70 cents per watt by the mid-1980s. By comparison, Siebert said, the cost for peak watt from the 2 billion Susitna project will be about 90 cents per watt. But as with transistors and penicillin, solar cells will only become feasible if the federal government puts its weight into making them so. What Mr. Siebert failed to mention is the high rate of inflation rate could raise the peak price of solar energy from the 70 cent level to a high that is anyone's guess. And that's assuming the government projections are met, which I have never known to be. Alaska Energy for America Inc. and its members, Susitna Power Now and its members, strongly favor the construction of the Susitna Power Project as soon as practicable. Support for the project derives from the knowledge that Alaska is in a position to answer its power needs without extensive use of fossil fuels. The Susitna project is located so that clean hydroelectric power can be made available to the two largest users in the state, namely Fairbanks and Anchorage. And the advantage is twofold: less waste of fossil fuels, cleaner air that would dramatically reduce winter ice fog in Fairbanks, and give both cities a chance for cleaner air. Of secondary interest in the construction of Susitna Power is the resulting recreational benefits, and those benefits would be available to many due to the unique location of Susitna, halfway between two populated centers and close to many homes in those areas. It makes more sense now than ever in man's history to harness the free-flowing energy of our rivers through the use of modern construction methods. When we are faced with inflation, faced with a dwindling inventory of fossil fuels, it seems almost inconceivable that we should sit by, pay the high prices for non-renewable fuels, when all we have to do is build the Susitna project that will stand for generation after generation, producing power at little increase in cost for the life of the dams. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Austin Ward was chairman of Yukon Power for America Group for a long time. Made a real contribution to
Jane Edmund? Oh, okay. Yeah, come forward, please.
My name is Jane Anvik, and today I'm coming before you as a member of the Anchorage Assembly. As you are aware, I'm sure that the Anchorage Assembly has passed a resolution in support of the passage of this bill in their joint meeting when we had with Fairbanks. And rather than keep you here all day hearing the same thing over again from any number of people, I would just like to stress that I think that the necessity of the project is dictated by the future economic development of the entire rail belt area to have a ongoing source of power that is not petroleum-based, and that is, in fact, something that will be environmentally sound over a long period of time. A particular concern to the environmental concerns, my issue has to do with it is a renewable resource that will continue to go on long after the life of Prudhoe Bays as they come and go throughout the history of Alaska, and I strongly encourage you to act positively on the passage of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, Jane. Mr. Larson? This will be our last witness. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Al Larson. I lived in Alaska since 1942, and our village corporation has some land holdings in the area that will be affected by the proposed legislation, and I would like to go on record as saying that we would support it, and we think it's really necessary.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Which
village?
Chickalinga Village.
Say again?
Chickalinga Village.
Oh, Chickalinga. Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. I tell you, you've got a big responsibility. I was in favor of passing this out until you talked. Now I'll see what I know. You go right ahead, though. Feel free.
I want to get some more of your time, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Senator Gene Klein from the Alaska Chapter Associated General Contractors, and I would just like to reiterate our support for the development of hydroelectric power in Alaska, and specifically the construction of the Susitna Project and the rail belt tunnel. Thank you.
Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr.
Yes.
Chairman.
I hear a lot of motions. Do I hear a commotion?
Mr. Chairman, before that, I noticed looking through the packet that we have, I hope this letter from U.S. Senate has been entered into it.
Yes, it has.
I second it.
Make a motion to pass the bill out unanimously.
Any objection? If not, so ordered. We're adjourned.